Well, you know, late summer and fall in particular for me is perfect time to take a bike ride around Wisconsin's countrysides to soak in the colors and get a little exercise. Today, we'll be learning everything from what you need to know about riding your bike in the fall to maybe fixing it up or does it need a little repair with our guest back with us. Ian Aestreich is the founder of Curbside Bicycles in Madison and Chicago, a traveling bike repair shop. So we'll talk with Ian cycling in the fall, and he'll share how to make a few basic fixes on your bike and, of course, answer your questions as well. Is your bike making a funny sound like mine will sometimes do? Tell us what's going on with your bike. Maybe you want to know where to go. We can talk a little about that as well with Ian. You can join in. Number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Ian, welcome. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about Curbside Bicycles and what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for having me get back again, Larry. Mm-hmm. What an honor. So I started Curbside Bicycles 4 years ago during the pandemic. It was a perfect storm of everyone was inside trying to get outside and bike shops were swamped. So I thought, why not set up pop-up bike repair shops? I'm here in Dane County, all over town at businesses and parks and such. And this is now my fourth year doing it, and it's only gotten bigger and better. And it's such a amazing way to serve the community and allow everyone to have super fast, convenient bike repair services.
How would you decide where to pop up?
That's a great question. Everybody asks that question. So when I first started, it was honestly just every connection that I possibly knew. I reached out and said, oh, could I please come to your driveway or could into your neighborhood? Do you have a way to tell neighbors? Like, where would you post? I lost my dog. Could you post on there that we're going to do bike tune-ups? And then from there, customers would say, this is amazing. Have you been in this neighborhood? Have you been over here? I have a connection at this school, at this farmer's market, at this business. So it is like the definition of word of mouth and grassroots, slow building. And now at this point, I have a huge list of past businesses and people that I've worked with. So now my goal is to evenly spread out across Dane County, setting up pop-ups. So yeah, very fortunate to have so many people be open to this idea.
Yeah, it's great. I love the idea. And here we got back to school just around the corner. Students, young and old, might be riding their bikes to school. I'm wondering about visibility gear. If you're a commuter, what should they be wearing or maybe installing on their bikes?
Sure. Great question. There's a lot of different options. I mean, I think by law, those little reflector things, that the red one on the rear and the white one on the front, you need to keep those on unless you have a light that you replace it with. But always a good, if you're driving perpendicular to a car who's coming at you, those aren't doing much good. So you can actually have your tires, whenever you have your tires swapped out, opt for one that has a circular reflective strip all the way around the tire. Almost all brands will offer that option. That's a great visibility increase. Of course, there's all sorts of apparel you can wear. You could wear hats or reflectors on your helmet or a vest or an ankle band. And of course, if you're going to bike at night, lights are pretty cheap. Everyone should get a light. That's a number one thing.
I was just thinking about that this morning. I'm always out early for my jog in the morning, and a biker went by and had a helmet with a light that blinked on and off, but you could see that person coming a mile away.
Yeah, they actually make helmets now, not only with lights, but it'll detect when you lean to the right or the left as if you're about to make a turn, and it'll do a turn signal on the back of your head. You don't see it very often, but it's pretty neat.
Dave in Milwaukee has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good morning. I just came into ownership of an old tandem, a Trek T100 in very good condition, but I'd like to add a few more gears in the back. It's an old freewheel. Can I get a freewheel with more gears? It only has 7 in the back, and if not, do I need to change the rear wheel to a cassette, and do I need to change the chain if I add more cogs in the back?
Great question. Usually freewheels cap out at about 7 gears. You might be able to find one with 8, but that's not a huge increase from what you currently have. So if you're looking to get like 8, 9, or maybe even 10 gears in the rear, then you are unfortunately looking at a new rear wheel that would be cassette compatible. So then you would put a new cassette on there. That would also mean that you need a new chain. And you would also need a new right-hand shifter, because currently your shifter for the rear has 7 clicks for your 7 gears, but you need a shifter that matches how many gears you have in the rear. So it would be threefold. You'd have to swap fourfold. The wheel, the cassette, which is the gears, the chain, and then also the shifter, and then probably install a new shift cable. So perhaps I would consider if 7 gears is enough gears, but if you really want more gears, yes, it is possible.
Yeah, it's going to cost you a few bucks.
Yeah, it will cost you a few bucks.
Yeah, for sure. Good luck with that, Dave. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Lucas in DeSoto emailed us, speaking of chains. The chain keeps falling or slipping off Lucas's bike. Why is that, and how could it be fixed?
Okay. So there's many different reasons, and I'll just hit like a top 3 reasons.
Okay.
Yeah. So if the bike is a more simple bike, a kid's bike, or a single speed bike, the chain may not have any sort of chain guard on the front that's actually helping to guide and hold it onto the front gears. So Lucas, you can look at your front gears and ask yourself, is that chain actually prevented from falling side to side? And if not, you can look into chain guides that you can install on the frame that'll hold it in place. More likely though, you probably do have a front derailleur, which is the front shifting mechanism. So in that case, it's probably an issue of your limit screws being misadjusted. So the limit screws, there's going to be 2 screws on that front derailleur. So again, that front piece that shifts your chain up and down. One of them is labeled L, one of them is labeled H. And without going super in depth on the radio, I would just recommend watching a YouTube video. Just look up limit screw adjustments. So you can figure out, is your chain falling off towards your foot or in towards the frame? And then look up a YouTube video from there. But it's probably your limit screws.
Ian A-Strike, our guest today, founder of Curbside Bicycles in Madison, and actually has a little pop-up in Chicago as well. You can join in 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. Listener call couldn't stay with us, though. They're looking for an e-bike. What do you think about e-bikes, and how much should they spend, and what are the qualities of a good one?
Yeah, I think that's probably like the number one question in the bike buying world right now. So how much should you spend? I'll just start with a general ballpark of, if you're spending less than $1,000 on an e-bike, you could probably find one of those on like Amazon. You're making a mistake, because that is a very poor quality in all likelihood bike. That just has a motor and a battery strapped onto it. And the build is probably not properly built for less than $1,000, not looked over by a mechanic. So you're riding something that goes rather fast at that point, and it's kind of unsafe. So I would say a good minimum to shoot for might be like $1,500 type of thing. And of course they go all the way up to probably $10,000, and that might be overkill. I'll say that probably is overkill. So really what you're looking for is, buy a brand that has been around for a while, seems reputable, has a lot of reviews, because if your e-bike brand that you buy, you're trying to get a deal, you buy some sort of niche brand, if it goes out of business, you then no longer have support for your e-bike, and you can't order batteries and you can't order parts, which that is the thing that's eventually going to go bad on your e-bike, is the battery, and that's going to be a high cost to replace. So if your company no longer exists, you're kind of just a fish out of water. Beyond that, if you go with a much cheaper e-bike, the battery will die faster. So I would say Just to give a recommendation of a brand, Rad Power Bikes. They've been around. They're probably one of the first brands to do e-bikes and get into the mass market. And they have a wide variety of different bikes. Of course, Trek and Specialized and all the big brands also make good e-bikes, but their price points are going to be a little higher.
Damn. I have all Trek bicycles.
I do too.
I really like it. If I was going to buy an e-bike, I mean, just me personally, I'd probably look at a Trek.
Yes, and Trek do make wonderful e-bikes. They usually have Bosch motors on them. They're going to be a little bit more expensive. One thing, I'm just going to speak really quickly to the whole like brand war between Trek and Specialized, Giant, whatever. Unless the bike is very, very expensive from any of those brands, if it's very expensive, then it probably was built in the U.S. by that brand. For any of the just the sort of mid-range or regular commuter bikes, all of those bikes are frames that were bought overseas, brought over here, and then painted with the brand. So the difference between a Trek and a Specialized and a Giant at the mid-range level is the paint. all the components that make it up aren't even Trek. Those are things like Shimano and SRAM. So I also seem to have this loyalty towards Trek. However, other bike brands also make very good bikes.
So what's the battery life on, let's say, a mid-priced e-bike?
Yeah, so when you buy them, they always have a range of how long the battery will last you for like a ride. So usually the more expensive of the bike, the longer the range. In terms of how long that battery will actually stay good on the bike, as in you don't need to get a new one, if you're spending less than $1,000, it's probably going to die in 2 or 3 years. It also depends on storage conditions. If you live in Wisconsin, which I'm presuming listeners do, mm-hmm. Maybe don't store that battery in the garage in the winter. Take the battery off in the winter or really hot summer days and store it in climate controlled inside. That will really prolong the life of your battery. For a nicer higher end e-bike, you're spending a couple $1,000s. There's no reason that that battery shouldn't last 5 to 10 years. It will slowly diminish over time, as do all.
We've got lots more to talk about with Ian Aestreich, founder of Curbside Bicycles in Madison and Chicago, and he'll be with us right up until 12:30 today. If you have a question about your bike, or maybe you have a question about where to ride as we get into the fall season, join in. The number's 800-642-1234. You can email to ideas@wpr.org. We'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. Then we'll be back with Ian. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for being with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking bicycling and bicycle repairs with Ian Aestreich. He's the founder of Curbside Bicycles. They do pop-up bike repairs in Madison and Chicago. And as we talk with him, I hope you'll join in. Maybe you can share your favorite bike routes around the state, or tell us about the time you blew a tire on a long ride, or maybe just a question about your bike. Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And we have Ruth from Eau Claire on the line, so let's go there. Ruth, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I just want to put a plug in for e-trikes. Especially for people in my age group who are, you know, getting older, 65, 70, and they're wanting to get a bike, it's fun to go back to your childhood and ride a bike. But if you have any balance issues or develop balance issues, you're not going to have that bike for a long time. And you're better off with trikes, and trikes are awesome. And so just something for people to think about if they're looking e-bike, e-trike, lots of options there. But what I have had trouble finding, which I'd like some input on, is a tandem trike, a tandem e-trike.
Hmm.
All right. First, Ruth, thanks so much for that plug. I totally agree. I actually have a friend here in town that's older, and he had his e-bike and loves it, but is now developing balance issues. So we've been chatting about e-trikes. I'll get to your tandem bit in a second, but for anyone who has balance issues, who is potentially thinking about an e-trike, maybe after hearing that comment, I would recommend if you can go into a local bike shop and test drive one first, just because trikes do feel different than a bike. A bike you turn by leaning, and then the bike turns with you. A trike, you can't lean because it's on three wheels. So you actually have to turn the handlebars, and it does feel different. Some people don't like it. So I do think it's great because it's very stable, but yeah, do go test ride it to make sure you like it. In terms of a recumbent tandem e-trike, Ruth, I honestly cannot give you a recommendation. That's such a...
Do they even exist?
I bet you they do. Just because I don't personally sell bikes. I do the pop-up bike shops around town, and I do a lot of service. I do think I've definitely worked on recumbent tandem e-trikes. Or sorry, not tandem, regular. But I haven't worked on a tandem. I bet you if you Google it, though, it will come up. But Ruth, perhaps you have and it hasn't come up. Maybe you should make a business.
There you go, Ruth. Thank you so much for calling. Mark in Duluth, Minnesota, on to you now. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Larry. I would like to ask your guest. I have a friend who has a pretty new bike, and he, when it's in the higher gears, he says sometimes it jumps, you know, skids off the rear gears.
Got it. When you say higher gears, do you mean the larger ones, the smaller one? Higher being like harder, or higher being easier?
Higher being harder.
Okay. And it's the chain's falling off the back or the front?
The back.
Got it. Where it's an issue.
It slips over. It slips over the cogs as opposed to falling off.
So it just goes to the wrong spot. It might skip a cog.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
So that definitely sounds like if it was falling off, it would again be the limit screws, which we talked about earlier. You can do a YouTube video. But if it's skipping through the gears and not solidly sitting on a gear, then that's a cable tension issue. And that's a very, very common issue, especially with new bikes, because you mentioned that. When you buy a brand new bike, chances are that cable on that bike is brand new. And a brand new cable within the first 100 miles does a lot of stretching because it kind of gets the slack out of it. Mm-hmm. So since that cable then stretches, it will totally throw off the rear gear ratio. And so it's a very simple fix for a bike mechanic and potentially a simple fix for a home mechanic. Again, I would just go on YouTube and look up rear derailleur indexing, and that will fix the problem if you correctly index it or bring it to a bike shop.
And yeah, and you can sound really smart when you
Oh yeah, say rear derailleur indexing to your friends and they'll all just blink at you blankly and say nice. I should say wherever he bought the bike from, usually bike shops are good about if you go back to the shop and describe the problem, they'll fix it on the spot in like a minute for free since you bought it.
All right, Mark, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Bob in Osceola, it's your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Larry. Nice show you got. Got a quick story and then a question. I had a blowout story about 3 years ago. I was riding my bicycle on the road, and I saw like a gun going off. It was instantly flat. So I took the tire off an inner tube out, and there was it looked like a tooth from an animal, like a cat tooth or a squirrel tooth or something, went through the tire, and it sounded like a .22 going off.
I can tell you, Bob, I have never had a tooth flat.
Haven't either. But you got a question, too.
I have a bicycle with disc brakes, and I think I need new pads, brake pads. Are they universal, or are they special for each brand of bike, or what?
Bob, let me first ask, why do you think you need new pads? Because they're loose?
No, I got them adjusted so there's not much play in them. But when I apply the brakes, it doesn't really stop that good, and it makes a not real very nice noise.
Okay, got it. So I have two recommendations for you. Well, I'll first answer your question. They are not universal. They're very far from universal. Every different disc brake. There is one that is the most standard. So, like, chances are that's the one you have, but it would definitely be bring it into a bike shop so they can get you the right one. In terms of disc brake squealing, this is a general recommendation for people. I think I recommended this last time on the show, but because it's magic. There's a thing called Finish Line Disc Brake Cleaner. Finish Line is the brand, Disc Brake Cleaner is the product. You quite literally just spin the wheel and spray that sucker on the disc brakes. You don't even have to wipe it off. Nobody knows how it works. It's magic. It almost always fixes squeaks on disc brakes. However, if it doesn't fix the squeak, or Bob, like you said, if it's not grabbing, you may have metallic pads, especially if it's making a loud noise. You can switch to semi-metallic, which is half metallic, half resin, or full resin pads. Full resin pads will absolutely stop you much faster on a dime. However, since they're softer, they do wear faster, so you have to get them replaced more often. That's why semi-metallic pads are the most often installed by bike mechanics, because they're kind of a blend between the two and usually don't make a noise.
Bob, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Larson in Seymour, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks, Larry. I've got a question on the e-trikes that was just mentioned a little bit ago. I have a trike, a Sunseeker. I'm wondering two things. Can I get an e-kit to add on to an aftermarket bike like that? And do I have to do anything other than just the drive? Does it also involve replacing the brakes, as an example? That's it.
Okay.
Great. Thanks, Larson. They definitely do make e-bike conversion kits out there. There's a brand that's completely escaping my mind, but if you look up e-bike conversion kit online, they'll pop up. I know that I'm literally imagining the commercial that I've seen for this, and it says, this is an e-trike. This is an e-trike. Switch is the brand with a Y. And it's like all different sorts of bikes. So their whole thing is that it's adaptable to many different types of bikes. So I would think that, yes, the main thing you swap out is a wheel. That wheel is actually what has the hub in it. And of course, that's part of the kit. And then it does require a little bit of wiring. But I don't think that you would have to replace the brakes. However, the best thing to do would be to, again, Google e-bike conversion kit, contact that company, the one I'm thinking of is Switch, and send them a picture. Email them a picture of your bike and say, do you think that we could do this bike? Because, of course, they're going to know their product best.
And Switch is spelled with a Y?
S-W-Y-T-C-H.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much, Larson, for calling. Matt emailed us. They bought a trike mid-motor with a 250-watt battery. Matt figured it's less likely to get stolen. They wanted a bike that was not a monster to ride when the battery died. They had some of the B-cycles give out a distance from home, and without the power, it is quite a chore. Why aren't e-bikes thinking about those times when the battery inevitably dies? Matt's wondering if they're overthinking this to the detriment of their biking experience.
Yeah, well, so for context, B-cycles are something here in Dane County. It's like those Bird scooters that you'll see in other big cities. We don't have scooters. We have bikes here in Madison. But yeah, they get heavily used. So I'm imagining the battery life on some of them goes down. I think for cheaper e-bike brands, they're just trying to make a sale. Yeah. Quite honestly, you know, they're not necessarily worried about if their bike dies. They just want to get it out the door. But for better brands, like I said before, they are going to, the battery's going to stay charged for longer. And I think that the range, because when you buy an e-bike, your motor and battery is always rated for a range of miles, up to a 50-mile ride. I think the higher quality e-bike will have a more accurate range, but you also should pay attention to that range and make sure that you're not going to exceed it.
So the good ones are about 50 miles?
No, I mean, I would say 50 miles is probably baseline. Oh, almost man. Any e-bike should probably be able to do 50 miles. Good ones can go 100, even 200 miles.
Okay.
Yeah, which should probably satisfy most anybody.
Yeah, I would think so. Jim in Newport Township, Illinois. Your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Happy midday. I have two comments to make related to trikes and recumbents in general. Previous caller asked about a tandem trike, and I have seen one. One thing to be aware of, this particular person bought a large full-size pickup truck primarily for the purpose of transporting this tandem trike.
Mm-hmm.
But on the subject of recumbents in general, beware that you are playing a different ballgame in transporting that bike versus the standard diamond frame bike. Now, personally, I ride, one of my bikes is a traditional long wheelbase two-wheel trike, two-wheel recumbent. Recumbents are, people don't realize it right now because the trikes have taken over so much of the market for the recumbents, but recumbents are around for many decades before the person came up with the idea of going to a trike. They were two-wheelers. But in any event, transporting them is a different project from transporting a standard diamond frame.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah, I agree, Jim. You sound like you're a recumbent groupie, which is great. It's a club. It's definitely a club. I actually have a friend in town. They have not an e-bike, but it's a recumbent tandem trike. And they had to have a special trailer custom built for that trike in order to transport it for exactly the reason you said, that the sucker is long.
And the other thing that's come up a bit, and we were talking about it off air, is with the e-bikes is weight.
Oh, yeah.
And it takes a bit just to get them going compared to a non-e-bike.
Yeah. So let's do 2 points on e-bike weight. One, if you're used to, let's say, a road bike or a lighter bike, and people may tell, oh, you should get an e-bike, whatever. Maybe you're aging and everyone's giving you their opinions about your knees. you should get an e-bike. Be aware that if your bike weighs between 10 and 20 pounds, it's a nice road bike, or, you know, even like 10, 25, whatever, a regular bike, the amount of effort you have to put in to get that bike to go is not that much. Like, it's kind of easy to pedal it right and start going. E-bikes, you're basically talking about starting at 60 pounds, 70 pounds. I've seen e-bikes up to 90 pounds. Now, the more expensive, you can absolutely spend $8,000 and have a very, very light e-bike. So that would nullify the problem, but you now have faced the problem of spending $8,000 on your bike. So for most e-bikes that people are buying, those suckers are really heavy. And by buying that heavy bike, you basically necessitate the need for the electric motor just to be able to ride the bike. I think Jim's point, or whoever mentioned going out on a ride and then it dying, if it's really heavy, you're going to have a heck of a time getting that back home. Two, if you ever want to transport your bike and you buy an e-bike, and it weighs 70 pounds, you have to be able to lift 70 pounds into your rack. And your rack needs to be rated for 70 pounds, which most aren't. And so you'd have to buy a new rack. So a lot of things to consider, but e-bikes are going to be heavy.
Mike in Madison will give you a chance. Hi, Mike.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. My question is relating to the e-bike laws. I've been reading a lot lately about changing of e-bike laws in New York, proposing to ban it. I know here in Madison they're talking about possibly not allowing them on bike paths and other things like that. I was wondering if you and your guests could cover what you know currently about the e-bike laws and what's going to change or possibly change.
That's a good question, Mike. I will say that I'm not super plugged into the local or national level of e-bike laws. However, I will say it's a complicated discussion because Like I said, here in Madison, we have B-cycles. So people can come into town and rent an electric bicycle. and then just start cranking around town on trails. I think, Larry, you mentioned this before, about how if you're not used to riding a bike, especially an e-bike, and you're blowing past people at 15, 20 miles an hour, and you're not saying on your left, or you're just like, you could very easily clip someone and hurt people or hurt yourself. So that is what I see it as a problem. However, a lot of people buy e-bikes so that they can make that bike a primary method of transportation, potentially on the bike trails. And they don't want to go bike on the busy streets. Like, I can't actually really, I haven't lived in New York, but I really can't imagine biking in New York on the streets. I think there's a movie about it. The look is wild. I mean, it's like an adrenaline rush. So I think it's a complicated issue, but I can't speak particularly to where it's at in the legislation.
Bruce emailed us, is it okay to keep bike batteries, e-bike batteries on a trickle charger when not in use?
Yeah, definitely a trickle charger is going to be better than a full-on charger. I personally, I guess I'm not an electrician, but I believe, like, just like your cell phone, if you just keep your cell phone plugged in all of the time, it's going to ruin the battery over time. Generally, once something is fully charged, you do want to take it off of the charger. But I know a lot of people bring their bikes into the garage, they plug them in, and it's like a set it and forget it thing. So yes, a trickle charger, much better than the full-on, full-blast charger.
Cody and Stevens Point, your turn. Hi, Cody.
Hello, thank you for having me. So years back, I did a trip from the Menominee to Stevens Point area. I guess a lot of that was on Highway 10. It always made me wish I had a more, like, bike-friendly route. I felt very close to traffic. And, like, during that, I did end up finding a trail, but that trail was like a sandbox. So that was a lot of work to really, really bike through there. And then getting off that trail, I blew a flat, and I didn't have it was on my bike trailer, not my actual bike. So it wasn't as bad, but I didn't have a repair for that. So I guess moral of that story is be prepared for all flats on your tire, your trailers as well. And I guess that was like 13 years ago. So I'm curious, and maybe I missed this earlier, but in the last 13 years, has the state improved or updated any biking routes around the state?
I would answer yes to that.
I would answer yes, absolutely. Yeah, I think, I mean, it depends where you live, of course, but certainly here in Dane County, we have a super robust, like every city has its own bike council that is improving trail access. In the state of Wisconsin, actually, there's something called the Wisconsin Bike Fed, and it's literally wisconsinbikefed.org. And that's a great place to look at, like, just everything biking. It'll have tons and tons of trail maps from all over the state. If you're looking at bike events coming up, they have an events page with races and volunteer events and charity events. So yes, trail infrastructure, absolutely. I feel like it's constantly improving in Wisconsin. It feels like something that we do a good job focusing on. WisconsinBikeFed.org, a good resource to look at those maps.
There's some really good ones. And just given where you are, I mean, the mountain Bay State Trail run is the longest paved trail in the state, and it's 83 miles, and it runs between Rib Mountain and Green Bay. And you're close enough, I think, Cody, that you might want to, I mean, if you want a smooth ride and pave the whole way, that is a good option for you. And that Gandy Dancer Trail, it's 98 miles along the St. Croix National Scenic Riverway. That's another one that is a really nice trail. And,
yeah, beautiful.
And we're getting, you know, this would be fall, would be a really good time
fall
to be.
Fall time's the best time. Great biking weather.
Fall time is the best.
Just a real quick plug on if you're taking a long ride. You have to have a little bike bag under your seat or somewhere on your bike with a tube, with a way to inflate that tube.
Oh, yeah.
Tire levers, and you have to know how to change a tire. Because if you're going on an 80-mile ride or 50, even 40 miles, even 20 miles, you don't want to get caught out 10 miles from your house with a flat and no way to get back. So at the very least, bring a phone so you can call your family or friends. But really, people should learn to change a tube. Again, YouTube.
Ian, thank you so much for being with us. The time flew by. I hope you'll come back and be with us again sometime.
Oh, I would be honored. Thanks for having me, Larry.
Ian Astrike, founder of Curbside Bicycles in Madison and Chicago. Great to have him with us today, and we'll get him back, and we will do this all over again. It was a lot of fun, and I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody, but that's kind of the way it always works. Tomorrow we'll get a peek into the secret world of how insects communicate and find out how much of spiders will remember. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.